Joel, it's funny. I always pronounce it relay wrong. pronounce it with a hard I at the end.
Yeah.
I'm sure you get that.
There is like a oh, what they're called, like airport vending shop thing. I think they're called Hutchinson or something in the US, you know, where you can like buy the cushions and the magnets, like all of the touristy stuff. And like the adapters, and they're also called relay. So like as a joke, we once posted on social media, these guys are trying to copy us. Like 20 minutes later, we got an email. Like basically, their lawyers asking us if we don't remove it, they're gonna sue. So we're kind of like, oh,
fuck. Oh man.
But yeah, we're used to like a hard night. Hi, welcome back, guys, to another episode of Rabbit Hole Stories. And today we have the amazing Ben Justman here. Ben, how has your day been so far?
It's been great. I'm really psyched to get out of the Colorado winter, get some real sun, and see the grapes start growing again soon.
What's the winter like in Colorado then?
So we had a pretty mild winter this year, but I live in I'm at about 5,600 feet. I'm sorry, I can't do meter math there, but it's high enough into the mountains, but also has this interesting microclimate where there's a ton of organic fruit grown here. It's a great, great farming location. And then about an hour away from me is a bunch of world-class skiing. So it's cool. It's a cold winter, but it's relatively mild compared to a lot of other mountainy, wintry places, and a perfect spot for growing fruit, grapes, peaches, cherries, everything.
Nice. I was just about to say before, I think you had like, did you like not have snow and now it's snowed again? And it's basically just a on again, off again relationship with the weather.
Yeah. Colorado weather is known for being extremely unpredictable. When I first moved to Colorado when I was 8 from Texas, the last day of school on May 25th was a massive snowstorm. And obviously mind blowing coming from Texas, hardly ever saw snow, but it's really one day to the next is completely different. You have no idea.
So I'm kind of interested. Do you associate yourself more with like Colorado now or Texas, or do you just don't really care?
I love Austin. I stayed connected with all my friends from 0 to 8 there and have family that lives there. So it's kind of a second home to me, but I grew up in Colorado from 8 on, and outside of a 1 year traveling and living in Southeast Asia, I lived in Colorado my whole life. So I'm very much a Coloradan and will likely call this place home my entire life.
That's awesome, man. Listening to your whole weather situation, it's the same in England. Like we are obsessed with the weather here. We have four seasons in one day. One day you get like sunshine and the next it'll be like snow. So yeah, it's unpredictable at best. And you don't know whether to go out with a jumper or layers or whatever. So I can empathize with your predicament over there. But mate, you got into Bitcoin from what I heard, because it was about 2021. Was that right?
Yeah, it was near the end of 2020. So I unfortunately wasn't around to catch the COVID drop into the 3Ks. But I guess just to get into the background, I was really into personal finance for a long time, kind of just dialing in my own, and got to the point where I had mine dialed in, and I just loved it so much that I wanted to help my friends. So I would help my friends get theirs dialed in as far as budgeting, the right bank accounts, the right credit cards for rewards, building credit, all that stuff. And all through from like 2016 to 2020, I was just helping my friends with that, anyone that was interested. And in 2019, I kind of had this shock to my personal financial system, just in how I viewed things. Was there was a repo rate spike that Lynn Alden talks about a lot. And I didn't know what that was, but the effect of that was it dropped my high interest savings account from 2% interest, which I calculated as keeping up with inflation, to essentially 0% interest. And so that was my like light bulb. Something is wrong with this system. I have no idea what, and I have no idea what caused this, but my savings can no longer keep up with inflation. I was just doing index funds for investing, low risk, and hadn't started my business yet at that point. But weirdly, in 2020, from 2018 to 2020, I was living with a guy who was orange pilling himself. And I didn't know this really until 2020. And I remember him walking upstairs during the COVID crash. I was working from home at the time and he was like flexing and all psyched, like, ah, I just bought more Bitcoin. I was like, all right, dude, cool. But that was, I had been starting my business for the last 6 months of that and then moved home to build a house with my dad on our family's property. And when I moved home, I moved in with one of my good friends from high school, who I consider to be one of the smartest people I know, who, as it turns out, was a Bitcoiner. And so he and I would talk geopolitics, economics, all that. I just love talking about that stuff. And obviously Bitcoin comes up. And so at first I'm like, all right, dude, like, you're crazy. This is a hedge against the system. I understand you're hedging the system, but like, all of your investments are hedges. What are you doing? Like, are you just betting on systemic collapse? And so I then, you know, he's smart. He talks to me about it a little bit more. I get curious. I want to understand this. And so I'm building a house with my dad and I just start listening to like 4 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a day while I'm building the house. So I'm working on the winery, which is extremely low time preference, building this house, which is extremely low time preference, and an introduction into like what it's like to feel like you own property. And all that time I'm listening to Bitcoin podcasts, getting orange pilled. And finally, after my journey of learning about personal finance, learning what money is, which is great. So during that time of really high intensity orange pilling, you know, I'm having my mind blown up, like completely flipping the way I think. Basically, right as I started learning about Bitcoin, that was the 2020 election, in which the primary I had voted for a socialist leaning candidate. The 4 years before that, I had voted for a socialist leaning candidate. And through Bitcoin, I realized that it's not, I thought that the solve to the world's problems was more slash better government. And what I realized is that it's the opposite. And I don't know what the best form of government is. And I think at each smaller scale, you can maybe get more controlling government. And when I'm talking smaller scales, I'm talking like family and town and community and stuff. But basically had my mind flipped the other way in a lot of things. And it came out the other side, a Bitcoiner with a very new lens of the world and the ability to see from outside the system and look in on it. Whereas previously I was within the system, looking at it, just wanting it to be better and didn't realize there was a way to look outside or was a perspective from the outside. So it's changed my life in a lot of ways, but it's a little hard to separate from the experience of building a business, building a house. And I've connected all, at least the business and Bitcoin as more than a lot of people have. So there's a lot of overplay between wine and Bitcoin, it seems like, in my life.
Nice. Would you consider yourself, because you said you leaned more towards the socialist candidate, I guess as a European, this would mean like more central left, because you Americans, the definition of socialism in America and in Europe is like vastly different. Over here, it's really the crazy people. Like, your socialists are not as crazy as ours. That has to be said. But through Bitcoin, would you say you've taken a more open-minded approach, more libertarian approach? Like, has it changed your perception of politics as a whole as well? Or is it more or less still like, okay, I don't really choose them. I choose to vote with my money.
I grew up in a left-leaning family, not socialism, but definitely a Democrat family. And a town that was, in a small farming town that was extremely Republican. And so I got vilified for the way I saw the world growing up. And I'm pretty hard-headed, so I leaned into it and went to a super, like, even further left-leaning college, which a lot of colleges are. And so I was like accepted there and I leaned more into it. And so it was just kind of caught up in that. But I came out more libertarian for sure. And my view of the world is like, politics in the world is, I don't know what the right politics are, but I just want to take the ability to print money out of politics. And then, you know, we'll see where the chips land, because that's a major shift. But I always saw that the two sides were messed up. I was a little bit more sure about the Democrats being less messed up. and the Republicans being more messed up because that's the way I was raised and didn't ever give that side a chance. Now I see they're both pretty messed up. And I think that was deep inside me. I kind of knew that. And so what Bitcoin gave me was words to the way I had already been thinking. So when I look back on the way I've changed, I see all these early seeds of, no, I thought this way, but I didn't have a way of framing it. I didn't have anyone else thinking this way. And I didn't really understand what it was at the root that was really pulling me in that direction. So I've always been a bit entrepreneurial, not liking authority figures, especially not being like told what to do. And therefore, like the libertarian side of me is like, yeah, dude, you were always here, but you just didn't really know that existed. And any libertarian politician is a bit of an oxymoron. So like, what great, I don't know how a libertarian politician is really gonna, like, there's so few libertarian politicians just because that idea is a bit of an oxymoron. So yes, I've shifted that way. Being in business, I think, shifts you that way. Getting older shifts you that way. And having something that you've earned and don't want to pay, like, I feel like taxes are stealing from you, pushes you that way. So Bitcoin was an accelerator. Starting the winery and running a business was an accelerator. But yeah, it was definitely a huge shift over the past 4 years in towards more libertarian thinking than I had previously been.
I, like you, Ben, pre-Bitcoin would have identified more left-leaning politically. And you're right in, I agree that throughout my sort of left-leaning political identity, if you like, I kind of had some sort of questions or sort of like discomfort about some of the things, but you know, you have to choose a side, right? You're either left or you're right, or you know, there's this sort of like pool in society where you're sort of like forced to make a decision, left or right, blue or red. You know, and you've got, you know, some people that identify as, you know, libertarian in the world, but you know, you just think, oh, they're just kind of like the crazy people, right? And then obviously discovering Bitcoin, you realize that it doesn't really matter. The polarization is just a different shade of the same thing, right? It's two sides of the same coin. And I'm just curious how that sort of transition has been like for you emotionally, because it seems like throughout your life, you know, that's been part of your identity. And now you've kind of come out of this sort of transition, or you've delved deeper down the rabbit hole. And that's kind of changed and shifted your political mindset in a way. And I'm just curious about how that's played out for you.
Yeah. Talking about politics is like definitely something I think about a ton. I'm interested in geopolitics. And to me, it's like sports, where it's something I enjoy to follow. But at the same time, like, I got caught up in it for a little bit, but it's not my focus. And it was never my identity. Sure, I had a little bit of that, but I would never say that was the core. Things started changing for me before I got into Bitcoin, where I was extremely high time preference in the way I did athletics and identified myself more as a really good skier more than anything. And then I started getting, when I was 18 through probably 22-ish, I started getting a ton of concussions. And that was my first like real moment of, no pun intended, hitting my head against the wall of who I was, who I wanted to be, and realizing that there was, yeah, I can have all the ego I want and be a really good skier, but there's no future for me in this. And I still, like, I'm a someone who always wants to be improving generally on the things that I really identify with. And I realized that I was hitting my head against the ceiling of what I could be as a skier. And obviously there's no future in that. I was not a professional skier by any means, but I identified it's that. So it got me to a point where I started taking more time before I hit things, and like, I'm not just going to send this and get hurt. But it also made me step back, and I built a ton of relationships through that. And so stepping back away from the intensity of it definitely hurt a lot of friendships, because that was the thing we did together. But then I started my business and I found Bitcoin, and I moved home to a town of 2000 away from the city where I'd been living with a bunch of college friends. And all of those things were extremely isolating in a lot of ways. Moving away from them is obvious. And then the business is something that just requires so much work that there's things you have to sacrifice in order to have success there, especially when it's so stressful that you're going through the startup time. And the startup time with a winery for what I was doing was 2-3 years. I mean, I started the winery that didn't have anything to sell for 2 years, was working a full-time job and starting the winery on the side. So I didn't really have time to build relationships. And then you add on Bitcoin on top of that, and I'm a bit of a pariah. You know, I went really all in. I was yelling Bitcoin. And that's like, I've come to the point in like quote unquote orange pilling where it's like, look, if my friends know I'm into Bitcoin and I just want them to come to me when they're ready. I'm not going to convince them. I want them to come to me so I can set them up on a good Bitcoin only app. Don't get distracted, just buy and hold. But yeah, it was all extremely isolating. It's hurt a bunch of relationships, but I've changed. I want different relationships after this period. I can attribute a lot of that to Bitcoin in the way that it helped me understand a lot of the thought process changes that I was going through, learning to think in first principles. I'd never heard of the term low time preference and realized that that's where I was thinking. And it kind of gave me a time frame to think about like, all right, I'm putting in all this effort. I'm taking no profits from the winery because anything that I potentially can possibly and probably too much take out of the winery and put into Bitcoin, I'm doing. And so I'm like living extremely broke and the business hasn't taken off yet. I know this is going to come to an end because I'm bullish on Bitcoin scaling up, but also like that kind of gave me a time frame like in 4 years, I'm going to be feeling a lot better. I just got to keep going. I know this is going to work. And if the winery doesn't work, I know Bitcoin will. And unfortunately, if Bitcoin doesn't work, I'm screwed anyway, because I think I'll fix the money, fix the world is not just a meme to me. And Bitcoin gave me kind of hope. It gave me a light at the end of the tunnel. I didn't know when the winery was going to start paying off. And things really started taking off about 8 months ago. But it's still like there's so much built up almost like time debt in the winery system that I've got so much. I've got 3 years of inventory sitting in the winery that I've paid for, produced, and everything. And if I could sell that, I would be set. I would be like feeling great. But it's a slow process to build brand, to build quality, and the wine has to age. So it's all this low time preference game. It's cost me a lot of short-term relationships, both in my focus and just in my mindset and shifting. And it's been an incredibly hard journey, like no question. But there's such a bright light at the end of the tunnel in both things that it's made me so psyched to kind of see where things go, both in relationships, family, business, Bitcoin, the world, in all these things moving forward, that I've never been more optimistic.
Yeah, I think really that sentence, Bitcoin changes you. It doesn't have to be, philosophical statement, like, oh, I'm going to change the world, or like, I'm going to build the best wallet on planet Earth. But it really changes your thinking about what you value in life. And I sort of had a similar experience. So I used to be a big party animal back in the days, going out to like 4 or 5 a.m. And occasionally it might happen if like it's a birthday of a friend and, you stay around and you meet old town friends. But you're really, at this point, I just want a boring life. Like I want to be done by 8 p.m.-ish with my work and the side hustle stuff. I want to either enjoy a good glass of wine. We'll get into that in a few seconds. Or just cook a meal, have a lovely evening, read a book, go out for a walk with my dog, whatever. Or maybe meet friends for dinner and not be home later than like 11 p.m. For a lot of people, that sounds boring as fuck. But for me, that's the way I want to live life. Ideally, like a little cabin, in a small town like you described, and then I think everything is settled. So that's amazing that you actually not only had found a way to get there, but also realized like, oh shit, there's stuff changing. And part of that change from what we've heard is your wine business. And I'm curious as to, because I know your dad has been in wine as his whole life, I think you said in a previous podcast or something.
No, so it was a hobby for him for the last 10, 15 years. But I'll go into it more in depth. Go for it.
Yeah, nice. And did that like did you just have like a father-son interest there? Like it started emerging from there? Or why did you decide to start up the winery and basically sell kick-ass Bitcoin wine?
So I grew up on the same farm I'm living on now. And it was my dad's dream to grow all his own food. So he retired at 52 from designing and building houses and built his final house on our property and has been doing that since 2002, just like retired to working 10 hours a day on the farm and not making money. So he had a few different blocks of apple trees. This is like lifelong dream realization for him. So he planted like a little bit of each kind of fruit tree that grows well here just to have a bunch of variety, and had a bunch of blocks of apple trees that were planted both as in for mass production and as varieties that don't really make money anymore. And so he had a few blocks of land that he didn't know what to do with. And a friend of his who's a winemaker in the area convinced him to plant Pinot Noir. That guy was going to buy all the grapes from him. My dad was never planning on making wine. But after the third year of growing, the grapes finally produced grapes. And my dad was like, hey, come buy them. The guy said, no, but I'll teach you how to make wine. I want them the next year when the grapes are a little bit older. So my dad made wine, realized that that was like way easier than what he was doing growing them, and said, well, I grow all my own food. I'm going to make my own wine now, just my dad being who he is. So he never sold the grapes to that guy and just made wine from 2006 till 2019 when I started making wine. My dad is an incredibly successful guy, great hard worker, but I will say he has, I think, no sense of taste or smell. And the wine he was making was really good. And I figured my dad knew something about it. I had never been totally connected growing up. I worked the summers on the farm for him, absolutely hated it. A lot of that because the dynamic of just working for your dad, you know, when they're your dad and your boss can be a little bit tough. But I started the winery knowing I wanted to have my own business, knowing that it was a bit more connection to the land. And in the back recesses of my mind, I knew I wanted that after living in the city. And also, my dad got the money to build his first house in the early 70s. When his dad died, when he was 27, he borrowed the life insurance money from my grandma to build his first house, which was like all the money my grandma had. She loaned it to him, built his first house, and started building his house. It started his career, basically. And so he loaned me the equivalent amount of money in today's dollars to start my business, and also had a bit of infrastructure to get me going in wine. No way could a 25-year-old who's never made wine before start a winery without like a ton of money to lose. And so I was set up as someone who was like, okay, my dad's going to teach me how to make wine. He's had success. I have enough financial backing to at least get me going. If I fail, I learn something. This is what I want to do. I need a committing thing. And so I am working my full-time job, still living in Denver, the city about 5 hours west of here, and commuting 5 hours to come back and make wine and get the winery going, knowing full well that it's going to be 2 years before I sell any wine. And I get back, have borrowed the equivalent of my life savings to start making wine, start doing it, and realize right away that my dad has no idea what he's doing. So my whole like, okay, my dad's going to teach me how to make wine and I'll figure this out because he made good wine, was just like out the window. Wow, you are all in, dude. You're going to have to figure this out yourself. And so I had this like, I knew this is what I wanted as far as I wanted to start a business and I really wanted to commit to something. And this was just like the perfect opportunity for me. So I just went all in on learning, learning from other winemakers, reading as many books as possible, learning about running a business in general. And the benefit of having 2 years to make the wine before I start selling it was that I could figure out how to run a business in those 2 years. I could learn the entire time and be able to like, quote unquote, hit the ground running when I was actually ready to sell wine. That first year, I had a bunch of wine go bad. probably at current prices, the equivalent of about $100,000 of wine go bad, which is way, I mean, ridiculous. I just didn't know that right away. So I kept going. And the next year I did everything right. I didn't have any wine go bad, and I've just been improving quality every year since. But yeah, it's been a pretty insane journey as far as like learning that from the basics and getting started, but incredibly rewarding and great to have a physical product that I can enjoy. And also one that's like a vehicle for great conversations and relationships. It's super easy to bring a bottle of wine over and have a good conversation, make a dinner a little bit better. But you asked me about family, and yes, I started this a lot of because my dad, and it's been incredibly gratifying to take my dad's life dream and build my own life dream on top of that. And I think my family is going to be like super well set off because of this. That said, like, I hated working for my dad, and I could never do that again. And so the relationship is that he is my grape grower. I buy the grapes from him and I owe him a ton of money. So it's a little bit more complicated, but he's not in the business in any way. But I also know that he's 75 years old and I'm going to have to take over the grape growing process at some point. I can't be stretched too thin. I got to run a business. So basically I have to run the business successfully enough, make enough money. Maybe it's Bitcoin pumping, whatever it is. I have to be successful enough financially to be able to afford to hire someone to run the vineyard long term, because like I said, it's my dad's land. It's what he loves, but he's 76 years old. And so that's really the time pressure for me.
Mate, that's an amazing story. And mate, talk about proof of work for a start, and being thrown literally in the deep end, you know, and just sort of like had to sort of try and find a way to keep your head above water and sort of learn to swim quickly. And I suppose it leans into a little bit about being a sovereign individual, and it kind of teaches you personal responsibility, you know, look at being your own bank and things. And you have to sort of really think about these things. Things that you've never really had to ever think about before, because it's kind of something you take for granted, right? And money is kept from you, it's obscure, and it just exists in the world. And, you know, so it kind of all leans into that as well. So I can see, like, through a Bitcoiner's lens, how that might lean into Bitcoin. I don't know if you've got any comments about what I just said, but I've got a question that moves on to something else. But I'll just give you the opportunity to say anything if you want to before I ask it.
I think that a lot of the sovereign individual stuff is about taking responsibility for who you are, your actions, and the consequences of everything. And Bitcoin is a great rabbit hole in understanding that, because you learn to think from first principles and you learn to look at the things you do and recognize the results of those actions. And also, I mean, like, for me, I thought long term, but I was able to get the verbiage to really understand what I was thinking long term and put more emphasis on that. But also, it gave me super, like, I was always bullish on myself being successful and everything, but what Bitcoin did is it was like, no, you're going to be successful, dude. Like, there's not even a question about it if you can just hold Bitcoin. So you better get yourself in a position where, not that my health was bad or anything, it was horrible or anything like that, but be in a position where when you're older, you're going to be able in good health and you're going to be able to enjoy it and build the things that you want to build correctly. So, because you'll have a lot of them when you're older. So the business was a lot more eye-opening for me in terms of personal responsibility, because there was so much more on my shoulders than just buying Bitcoin and holding it. Granted, watching my net worth drop by 80% was definitely like a lot of weight on my shoulders, but it's the choices I made. And so a lot of, just like wine, just like Bitcoin, a lot of like learning by fire and intense negative drawbacks early. But I think that builds a stronger foundation going forward, because you recognize your mistakes, you make those mistakes early without so much capital or time or whatever investment, you're able to hold on and learn from them and grow going forward.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's super interesting. Thanks for that perspective.
But my question is, how much does fiat fuckery and the fiat environment interfere with farming? And what kind of obstacles do you have to sort of overcome with sort of regulation and the industry itself? And do you have any issues with different sort of states with their laws and money? Let me get a sense of what the fiat world is, farming is like in the fiat world.
Mm-hmm. So I don't think that there's, what I'm dealing with as far as farming goes, there's not a ton of fuckery that I deal with, because the farming that I deal with, I take the grapes right away. I don't pay for an organic certification. I don't pay for a biodynamic certification, even though I could, just because my instincts are so anti-bureaucracy that I don't really want to deal with them paying them to come inspect my land that I know is good and adhere to their standards of perfection and also paperwork. So to get around that, I just take a direct approach with my audience, my customers, and try and have as much connection as possible. Be as upfront and as possible that my wine is not certified organic. No. But you're also going to drink this and you're going to feel better than you've ever felt because there's no chemical additives in this. And also, organic wine, great. The grapes were organic. Most of the additives come after the grapes are picked in the wine room. They don't have to tell you about any of that. So the farming side for me, not that crazy, but large scale farming in the United States, there's so much going on where, I mean, there's all the subsidies that make people grow things that are not actually profitable in super high time preference ways that degrade the soil to a point where their kids might not even ever be able to farm on that. Their load is decreasing. And the reason I was able to grow up on this farm is because the guy who owned it before he was 75. It's crazy. My dad's age when we bought it. He was such an old timer. And he was absolutely broke. He had a great piece of land, grew great fruit, but 65 acres is small time when it comes to being able to afford or being able to like be a player in the market, where there's this middle ground in a lot of agriculture businesses that is completely unsustainable. You either need to be, and this is in wine as well, where you either need to be small enough to be able to sell it all direct to consumer for a higher dollar, or large enough that you can compete on a large scale and have the economies of scale to be able to get your price down and be able to afford the rock bottom prices of wholesale fruit. And so this guy was kind of in the middle of things and was also during a transition period, I think, where that model, his middle ground model, was kind of dying. And, you know, he retired, he sold the land, got his payday, made some money. But like, that guy was a genius and a great fruit farmer and had been doing it his entire life, and he couldn't succeed. And there's a reason that there's the average farmer is like 60 years old in the United States. And so much of that is that the kids don't see the future in it. Sure, it's not sexy, but also it's not, you just can't make money in it. And it's like, there's no view of change on the horizon in a lot of farmers' landscapes, because they're just surviving moment to moment, a lot of them are surviving on subsidies. And there's no real growth opportunity. It's just, let's keep doing it. Let's eke by, and maybe we'll be able to sell this land one day to retire. And the kids don't see a future in that. They want something brighter. I mean, it's not just like, oh yeah, I don't want to go work the fields. It's that they would want to go work the fields if there was a bright future, whether financially or successfully in that, but it's hard to see for a lot of things. So I see it in my town. There's a small farming community, a lot of great organic producers that produce really high quality, smaller scale stuff, but even them, it's really hard to scale. So it takes a bit of community. There's a lot of community tools and help that people have, but yeah, it's really hard to scale as a farmer when you're really just like, if you're either large and you're selling to corporations for rock bottom price and competing with the entire world on price in an area with a strong currency, or you're small and just have to do everything yourself and I mean, that's just always going to be hard.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when you previously spoke about how you lived in Denver and then moved 5 hours away, basically to your hometown, you know, where you grew up and stuff. I think when I currently speak to a lot of Bitcoiners, so I think we're similar in age, Ben, like mid to late 20s, you know, you're still in that like hustling phase. You obviously have to earn the money. You have to earn as much Bitcoin as you can, ideally, and like stack as much as you can for the future. But then you also start thinking to, okay, if my time horizon is that low, like it doesn't really matter what's going to happen in the next, let's say, 15, 20 years, because I know I've got my Bitcoin and I've got my plans figured out. You slowly move into this thing, like you said in the beginning, do I really need to live like in this huge conglomerate of like a city? Can I move within like my family's boundaries or like the community I grew up in? And you kind of head back to your roots. And I think it shows on like your X feed, for example, if you like go to the farmer's market. And for me, like my weekends usually is like Saturday, get up, go to the farmer's market to buy your groceries from local people, because there's always more passion. There's always funny conversations in there. And really, people appreciate the crops they're growing or like the product they're delivering. And therefore, you also want to support. I fully do this because I've discovered Bitcoin. Before Bitcoin, like I didn't really care about this stuff. I'll go to the supermarket and stuff. But do you think that like more and more people, once they discover Bitcoin and realize what a low time preference actually is, will they sort of move back to this thing? Is like living in small communities becoming the next big thing? Or do you just think it's maybe one of these special Bitcoiner things that we all share?
I think low time preference plays a role in that. But the thing that I would point to is the hope versus nihilistic approach to the future, where what's the point of living low time preference if you don't think the future is going to be good? And so many people are caught up, one, on the fiat hamster wheel of not being able to afford what they want to do, and two, looking at the world, seeing the worsening geopolitical situation, looking at war, looking at famine, looking at climate change. And they're just like, what? Why would I care about what I put in my body or how I work out? They do a little bit, and you're not going to quite get someone to admit that they don't. But they don't care to the extent that they would if they were extremely hopeful about the future. And so if you are fired up about your life in 30 years, which I am, you're going to really put a lot of effort in now to make sure that that life is great. And there's hustling, there's trying to get ahead, there's working hard and working out and eating right. But coming back to the core of that is why. And the why for so many people just isn't there. Why would I do this? Sure, yeah, I want to like look good and get a hot wife and whatever, or I want to have money and get a sweet car or whatever. But it's like, for the deep down, like if you go into the core of people, they're not optimistic about the future and therefore are not motivated to really invest in they're not really looking to invest in the long term.
Yeah, I'm just remembering back to myself pre-Bitcoin, and you just kind of surrender yourself to the system, right? It is what it is. You just have to get your head down, survive, pay the bills. Oh, shit, the gas and electricity is going up again this year, and you know, it's going to be a bit tighter than I'm used to. And then you just have to sort of like really fixate on working, you know, as hard as you can to just keep your head above water. And the low time preference thing is just something I was never really able to ever entertain, because I just didn't think I had the sort of time. You know, I had other priorities. I just needed to fucking work and work and work and pay and pay and pay. And I think, yeah, it's a little bit of a sad existence, really, when I look back at it. So it would be nice to sort of like romanticize that when people start to wake up to Bitcoin, that can really sort of have a positive impact on them and the wider society. Anyway, that's just me rambling through my thought process here. But yeah, these are the thoughts that you've provoked, and sometimes I sort of dwell on through a Bitcoin lens. But towards the end of the show, Ben, you've heard the phrase "all roads lead back to Bitcoin." Surely you can't be a Bitcoiner if you haven't heard that phrase. That fact that all roads lead back to Bitcoin. And we thought it would be a good idea in this show to give each of our guests the All Roads Lead Back to Bitcoin challenge. So I'm going to give you a word or phrase, and you're going to somehow try and relate that back to Bitcoin. And me and Joelle were low-key texting in the background, trying to decide what word we're going to give you. And we've come up with the word mullet. How does mullet lead back to Bitcoin, Ben?
Yeah, so it comes down to low time preference, where when, let's see, I grew my hair out in college, at the end of college, and I kept putting off getting it cut, but I always said I would get a mullet. When I had long hair, whenever I cut this, I'm going to get a mullet. And I put it off so long that I was moving to Vietnam and had to get it cut because I was not about to live in the heat of Southeast Asia with hair down to my nipples. So I put it on so off so long that I had to make this high time preference decision to just go cut it all off all at once. And I always felt like I missed my opportunity there and never thought I would grow my hair out again. But then when the government shut everything down for COVID, my barber was shut down. And what started off as like a 1 month shutdown of barbers turned into, well, guess I'm growing my hair out again. And this time I had long hair. I discovered Bitcoin. And I realized that I needed to take the low time preference approach and get my hair cut into a mullet. And so I did. And it happened to be, this is the serendipity of living on a Bitcoin standard and taking low time preference things, is that things just tend to work out. And it, I got my hair cut into a mullet the same week that I had to get my passport picture taken. So now for the next 10 years,
perfect.
I'm living on a mullet standard on my passport.
I like it. We have like the Bitcoin standard and then we have like substandards emerging, you know, with like the mullet standard, probably a wine standard, if people are more curious. My brother actually has one now as well. And I didn't see him like half a year now. And I have to say, it did take some while to get used to. Like if you sit in front of him, you go like, okay, like I see the short stuff, but like the weird stuff hanging at the back. But yeah, it kind of suits him. So I guess we need more knowledge.
Hold on, Joelle. Hold on. Let's address your haircut. What are we calling your haircut?
It's just
what is
fluff
that?
Wherever it's going. So I can't grow long hair. It just starts crumbling to any place. I mean, at least I have
hair. I'm just head hair envious myself.
Ben, if people want to find out more about you and your wine, where can people find out? And this would be the place and time in the show now where if you got any special drops, anything to shill, please do so as well.
Of course. So I sell wine in the US only, unfortunately, so I can't get any wine to Europe. But I sell wine online at peonylanewine.com. I'm sure that'll be in the show notes. And then I'm on Twitter at Ben Justman. And what I do is I make wine with no additives. In America, that is a huge issue. People complain all the time about getting headaches when they drink wine. They just feel horrible afterwards and don't really, it's wine's kind of a black box. Like there's a ton of ingredients in wine, but it's the only food product that doesn't require an ingredients label. So you have no idea what's in there. It's also this like classism thing where, oh, you don't know your like this specific wine, like it just feels unapproachable. So I'm trying to make wine approachable and get people to think about the long-term benefits of drinking wine, where you can drink it without feeling bad the next day. I get texts every day like, oh my God, I drank your wine last night and I don't feel hungover today. It's blowing my mind. And so once you experience...
How much did they drink?
Well, that's the thing. It's like I had, my birthday was a couple of weeks ago and I had a ton of wine and I went to bed that night and it blew my mind how, wow, I'm drunk right now. And I didn't even think about being hungover tomorrow. That's not even in my mindset and this is not unique to my wine. It's just hard to find natural wine and it's hard to know exactly what's in your wine. So I'm trying to be upfront about that and give Americans the experience that a lot of people have in Europe I get a lot of time. Oh, is that, I tell people about the additives. Is that why I don't feel bad when I drink wine in Italy, but I come back to America and I feel horrible? So I'm trying to give people that experience. And my newest release is my Satoshi's Reserve bottle, which has been a 3-year project. Through my Bitcoin journey, I've always felt this pull to connect winemaking, my business, and Bitcoin. And so I set aside the best barrel, in my opinion, of my 2021 vintage. It turned out to be a Cabernet Sauvignon, and wanted to make this special for Bitcoiners only, because if I'm going to brand my wine as Bitcoin wine, it better be my best wine, because Bitcoin is the best money. So it's Satoshi's Reserve, 210 bottles. I released it on April 19th, right at the halving, and have sold about half of it in like 4 days. So it's going really quick, but if you can get yourself a bottle, I think it's a great celebratory bottle to open up, whether you have a fiat price prediction celebration, like $100,000 or $1 million, or it'll age gracefully into the next halving. So it's been incredibly awesome putting my wine out to Bitcoiners, having low time preference people experience low time preference wine. And it's also just incredible to work with people, sell, have my customers be people that I want to hang out with generally, because I love meeting Bitcoiners in person and hanging out. So it's been an awesome ride, and appreciate you guys for having me on.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think there's a theme picking up with wine and Bitcoin. A very good friend of mine, she's also selling wine from Austria with like special Bitcoin labels. It's called 21 Bitcoin Wines as well. And she goes on pretty much a similar step you do with the special collections. So I think like the trend on Bitcoin wine is very bullish, and people are picking up on that. And yeah, as you mentioned, all of the links will be in the show notes. We'll make sure to whatever Ben said, link it there. And there's not really left for me more to say, Ben, than thanks for coming on, for giving us your finite time, sharing your inside stories and all of the amazing stuff you're working on. And obviously to our listeners as well, thanks for your finite time. And as always, stay curious.